Marijuana may be legal in some states, but it is still very difficult to advertise. Legal marijuana states have strict guidelines about where marijuana ads may be placed. 420 Radio provides advertisers a marijuana-related on-demand platform skewed toward older adults that meets Colorado and other legal states' advertising restrictions. Visit 420radio.org/advertise to learn how you can place web ads that are immune to ad block software and audio ads heard live on 420 Radio and stored permanently in the enormously popular Russ Belville Show podcast. 420 Radio is heard by legions of dedicated fans who make up the activist leadership and entrepreneurial base of serious marijuana law reformers. Our audience is older, better educated, and more financially secure than most marijuana-related media can boast. Learn more at 420radio.org/advertise.
Well, hello everyone. Thank you for being here today. Thank you for letting me join you here today. I'm Ann Leininger, and I've had the pleasure and the really interesting experience in the last 6 months to be co-chairing the legislature's committee on implementing legal marijuana in Oregon. I think to help frame my remarks, I'd like to give you some background on me. I'm a transactional attorney by training. I worked as general counsel for Oregon Ironworks for a couple of years, worked representing developers of affordable housing, and worked for the Meyer Memorial Trust, which is a foundation that serves Oregon and Southwest Washington, making debt and equity investments and structuring and underwriting investments in real estate development projects, largely, that had a community benefit purpose. So I bring some, and I'm a former litigator with the Sierra Club Legal Defense Fund, so I bring some interest in environmental issues, project issues, and small business issues. I also am from Southern Oregon, which is affectionately known by many as the Emerald Triangle. I grew up in Ashland, and my family has lived in Southern Oregon for six generations. So we are long time, early in Rogue Valley people who unfortunately bought less land than you would ideally have had in retrospect. But my frame of reference is one of having grown up in like a West Berlin of progressivism within the Rogue Valley in Jackson County, Southern Oregon, which is not as progressive, right? But my family had a rock crushing business, which is also not progressive, but you know, important. You know, it's a natural resource extraction economy there in Southern Oregon, right? And it has been gravely affected by the change in the timber economy, which has, you know, significantly winnowed down. As we understand, we have to have more environmental protection regulation. And a lot of people in that part of our state and around our state have been trying to figure out, what do we do next? What is the next step for people who are used to making a living from the land in a natural resource extraction way as we become more focused on environmental sustainability? There are ever-increasing environmental protection regulations that affect what we do on our land, and there are a lot of people who need to make a living. So that is the framework that I bring to this work, and I worked on the Measure 91 campaign. So I was an active and public supporter, both because I think we need to find good ways for people all around our state, and particularly in some of our natural resource dependent parts of the state who are trying to figure out where economic opportunity lies next, to have good jobs, and also because I am moved profoundly by concerns about disparate impact of law enforcement on, particularly on people of color. A friend of mine wrote a book called The New Jim Crow, right? Some of you have read that, about how people of color have been so disproportionately incarcerated and affected by our war on drugs that has in fact not solved or maybe even exacerbated the problem that we have with controlled substances in the country. So that's what I bring. And I also bring this PowerPoint, which I will now attempt to use. Hey, all right, I'm going to talk about the economic, cultural, legal context. This chart shows that that the timber industry, once a really major economic power in Oregon, now accounts for less than 2% of the GDP in Oregon. And an interesting contrast is, as we've received a lot of testimony in the Measure 91 committee, that the relative economic power of these two sectors is something really to think about. I read recently a statistic that said the direct economic impact from timber at this point in our state is about $2 billion annually, direct economic impact. And I have heard testimony, you may have been there for this testimony, that the marijuana sector right now, and it's not even a traded sector, officially a traded sector market, and more people will perhaps get involved with it as it's legal, is already a $1 billion a year sector. You know, and fascinatingly, the part of the state that is most well suited for outdoor growing in any event is exactly the part of the state that has been most affected by the transition from the timber economy. So I find that to be a really interesting symmetry. So this is a picture of something from Ashland. Just to note that, you know, we're not only in an economic transition, an economic pivot point, but if you look at the politics of rural Oregon, and as a legislator and someone from that part of the state originally, though I now live in Lake Oswego, I represent Lake Oswego and Southwest Portland. If you look at the politics of Oregon, that area has traditionally, or has since the 80s, been strongly represented by Republican legislators, which is fine, and there's room for a wide range of views in our state, I respect that. But it'll be interesting to see what happens as the economic power of Southern Oregon shifts somewhat from the old school timber economy to this as an important emerging source of economic and perhaps also political power. It's generally different people, right, who are in the one industry and in the other industry. And when I went to Williams, Oregon recently, has anyone here been to Williams? It's a real sort of prime spot for outdoor cultivation in Southern Oregon. There are a whole lot of people there who talk about how they get their food at the Ashland Food Co-op and how they, you know, I think it's just a different set of political affinities and interests, and it'll be very interesting as economic power diversifies in that region to see what's going to happen in a political context as well. I think that the Ashland way of being is going to, some of the Ashland preferences are going to be more apparent in other parts of Southern Oregon too. So it's important to know that as we move toward legalization or move into legalization after this July 1st, one of the important frameworks that we have to conduct our conduct within is that of the Cole Memo. Who here knows the Cole Memo? All right, so that is a piece of guidance the Department of Justice, US DOJ, issued in 2013, essentially saying that if you adhere to these 8 or so strictures about how you run marijuana legalization in your state, we will not come in with the muscle of the DEA and shut you down or arrest people. And those parameters are things like, are you keeping marijuana out of the hands of children? Are you taking steps reasonably to eliminate gang activity and violence? Are you keeping marijuana off public lands? You know, in Southern Oregon, grows on public lands have been a really big problem and created safety problems for people who want to use our public lands. Are you keeping it off of federal property? A variety of things. I think I included the Cole Memo in the meeting materials. But as we are working as a legislature to support an orderly rollout of Measure 91 and successful continuation of the medical marijuana program, one of the things that was really emphasized to us is the need to take reasonable steps to try to prevent diversion or leakage into the gray market of product that may be grown legally, but in the medical context, I think we all recognize that a lot of people have a lot more product than they give to patients, even if they're really altruistic, good-hearted people who are doing right by patients, and how do we help make sure that that doesn't get diverted into the gray market? So that's animated a fair amount of our work in terms of implementing legalization. You know that in 1998, Oregon voters decided to allow medical marijuana. And in allowing medical marijuana, Oregon has joined 23 other states that allow medical marijuana. And It's been a robust and very successful program that the legislature has, as far as I can tell, tweaked and evolved quite a bit over the last 10, 12 years. Of course, the Measure 91 campaign was successful, and even though it went in 2014, November 2014, and it won with 56% of the votes cast, a lot of people thought maybe that wasn't going to work, right? Because it was brought to the ballot not in a presidential year, but there was tremendous teamwork. Who here was involved with the Measure 91 campaign? All right, nice work. And it's an exciting transition for our state. So now we join four states and the District of Columbia as states that allow legal adult use marijuana. And in 2016, we expect at least five other states, including California, Massachusetts, California, Massachusetts, Nevada, possibly Maine, and one other, anyone, are going to have these measures on the ballot also. And so, you know, we are definitely heading into a time when legal, responsibly used adult use marijuana is going to be legal across the country. And when that happens, the state legislature wants to make sure that Oregon businesses have an opportunity to be at the forefront of the new traded sector opportunity. You know, it's already a $1 billion annual business, and Oregon is perfectly situated to be a prime producer in this new market. And so we've been working to create a legal framework that will let legal cannabis businesses take a place alongside artisan food and wine and beer production businesses in a new wave of successful Oregon entrepreneurs that operate on sustainability, you know, with an eye towards sustainability and local production, and often progressive values that I care about, like treating workers well, and you know, you'll be interested to know, United Food and Commercial Workers (UFCW) played an active role in the campaign. This gentleman here might know that. They played an active role in the campaign because they care about workers having good jobs with health insurance and other benefits and being treated well and making a decent salary. And from what I understand, they've entered into one agreement already with an integrated cannabis business that has grow distribution and retail sites in the medical space that's going to really give voice to a lot of those values. So it's kind of an opportunity for us to create a really exciting new sector that operates with the values that a lot of us share, a lot of the cannabis entrepreneurs share, that I think align very much with the core values of Oregon. So it's really extremely exciting in that way. So our agenda through the session has been to take steps necessary as to the medical marijuana program to help it operate in a strong way, to continue operating, to keep patients access to medicine, and to try to deal with diversion issues. Because if we want the adult use retail market to succeed, we have to make sure that it's not being significantly undercut by a really flourishing gray market. And so within the medical space, we've taken a couple of steps. We've implemented a more robust tracking system, and this is in House Bill 3400 that the legislation is in. And let me just tell you, we have five key pieces of legislation that have passed through both chambers, passed out of the Measure 91 committee unanimously. It's a very broad spectrum of bipartisan, you know, people in that committee, but we unanimously endorsed House Bill 3400, which is the medical adjustments and the implementation of Measure 91, some adjustments around Measure 91. House Bill 2041, which moves the point of taxation from point of harvest to point of sale and allows local governments that allow all legal kinds of marijuana in their jurisdiction to invite its community to vote on whether they also want to impose a 3% local option sales tax. And then we have Senate Bill 460, which enables legal cannabis to be sold, adult use cannabis to be sold from medical dispensaries starting October 1st. if the local jurisdiction does not prohibit it by ordinance, and if the dispensary wants to do it. And that would start being taxed as of January 1, because Department of Revenue fundamentally just can't get a whole taxation system up and running between now and October 1, but they could by January 1, so that would give people a few months of adult use tax-free purchasing. Senate Bill 844, which gives medical patients a few additional rights and opportunities. One, if you're in hospice, it expressly allows someone other than your caregiver to administer medical marijuana if you wish that to happen and if the hospice provider is comfortable doing that. And if you are seeking an organ transplant, you can't per se be taken off the organ donor list because you use medical marijuana. That's part of this. Another piece of this is a task force on medical research and identifying how we can overcome some of the structural barriers, namely federal dollars can't be used to support cannabis research right now. So how do we overcome those structural barriers, and how do we help necessary and useful cannabis medical research move forward? I think a lot of us agree that we want to know more about what the helpful properties are. We want to know more about any harmful issues that we need to be aware of. There is a strong feeling within the public safety community that we want to understand a little bit more about how we can reasonably deal with driving while intoxicated issues. And that meets up against the strong desire by many of us to prevent unduly intrusive ways of detecting cannabis in the system. But my favorite part of Senate Bill 844, and this is a theme that I think my colleague on the panel will also be talking about, is expungement opportunities. So if you care about the fact that the people of color are roughly 2 times more likely to be in trouble with the law for marijuana offenses, even though people of all backgrounds use and break those rules at roughly the same rate, then you have to care about disparate impacts. You have to care about the fact that a lot of people got in big trouble, and it's really stigmatizing to have criminal offenses on your record for conduct that's no longer illegal. So a key piece of the work that we've been doing is making sure that if you may have violated a law related to cannabis in the past and it's no longer illegal, or we've come to understand that it shouldn't be illegal, you shouldn't wear a lead weight around your ankle for the whole rest of your life because you did that at an earlier time in our country's history. I mean, we are evolving as a country socially in a whole bunch of ways, right? The marriage equality transitions that we've all embraced show that, a number of other things too. And so Senate Bill 844 enables people who are underage 21, who've had a marijuana-related offense, to have that expunged within 1 year after completion of any penalty, as long as they don't have subsequent stuff that they're getting in trouble for. And so that creates a 1 year expungement waiting period instead of the 5 year that otherwise applied. In Senate Bill, or House Bill 3400, you'll see that we reclassified a whole bunch of cannabis-related crimes down from Class A felonies, Class B felonies, to misdemeanors, or in some instances, Class C felonies, which is the smallest kind of felony. And in many instances, we reduced the waiting period for expungement down to 3 years from 10 years. So I personally feel like that's a really important thing. And fundamentally, the fact that we were able to get this committee of legislators that includes, you know, the Senate minority leader, who's fabulously smart and charismatic, but much further to the right than I am on environmental issues, Jeff Cruz from Roseburg, Peter Buckley, who's very progressive, Floyd Prozonsky, who's very progressive, and everyone in between to unanimously support bills that simultaneously said things like sales tax, crime reduction, and marijuana. You know, who would have thought 3 years ago, who would have thought that we could get that chorus of people unanimously embracing this legislation? It shows the really significant cultural change that we're going through. So that's a bit of a snapshot on changes we've made in the medical marijuana framework. You know, enhanced tracking, efforts to protect existing dispensaries, some plant limits, but with grandfathering provisions in, so that if you've grown, most everyone that we identify grows under 100 plants right now, because I guess federal law kicks you into a more significant penalty category if you go above 100 plants. So 96 plants was the ceiling that we identified. We made some changes so you can lawfully possess what you've grown lawfully, which is really significant because it used to be the case that you could get in big trouble, you know, the moment after you harvest because suddenly you were in violation of the law, even if you were lawfully growing with cards for a certain number of patients. And we've tried to make the tracking system not too onerous because we want to make sure that the mom and pop growers, the small growers who may be doing this work right now, and there's a, you know, there's an influx of much more sophisticated, well-capitalized businesses coming in, and that's, you know, part of the business process. But we want to make sure that we don't make compliance with some more rigorous rules so onerous and so costly that businesses that want to come in to a regulated system just can't do it because they don't have the money and it's an extremely alienating level of regulation. Now, whether we hit the sweet spot on that is, you know, to be determined, but we made a conscious effort to make the medical program one that is prudently regulated but not excessively regulated such that it pushes people away from wanting to comply. Anybody watch Schoolhouse Rock when you were little? Or is that just me? Yeah, thank you. So implementing Measure 91, we again, we needed to define some things about the kind of tracking system that we would have. We needed to define the kinds of licenses and certifications. Like, have you heard of the Immaculate Conception Program? I mean, I guess everyone here has heard of Immaculate Conception. And it, you know, it's a head scratcher, right? So in the legal cannabis sector, there's also an Immaculate Conception problem because as of July 1, you can grow 4 plants, right, at your house, and you can receive gifts of marijuana, but you can't get the seeds and starts yourself legally in order to produce it at your house. And so we have some problems associated with where you get the stuff to lawfully exercise your rights under this new law. So we have certifications that allow businesses to sell seeds and starts and, you know, kind of a range of things that you'd want to do. We of course moved tax from point of harvest to point of sale, which can also be said as sales tax, which is, you know, it's a big cultural shift. It's almost like we said, and you shall pump your own gas. We did not say that, because that would have been crazy now, right? But we did implement, with the unanimous support of the sector, a sales tax for cannabis taxation, because people all just said it will be way more efficient. You know, we're trying to run successful businesses here. It'll be much more efficient to do it in this way. And also, it'll be much better for concentrate and edibles producers. Because if you tax at point of harvest and people are making products that involve really intense concentrations of cannabis, then that would have rocketed the price of those products by incorporating in the taxation at the point of harvest to an unattainably high place. So we got input from people that it would be much better from the industry's perspective to do a point of sale. The 3% local tax, that's a change from Measure 91. And as someone who worked on the campaign, I was pretty reluctant at the outset to support any changes to Measure 91. But after a bunch of debates and negotiations, it seemed clear we needed to do it. Thank you. Essentially, we have a cultural problem. We have a cultural issue, and that is not every part of Oregon is as comfortable with the idea of cannabis legalization as I am, or as the people I went to high school with in Ashland are. But we all now are under the same state law, and so after just about fracturing the committee over whether we would allow local opt-outs without a vote of the people, because Measure 91 allows local communities to opt out on a vote of residents, we came to a conclusion that communities that voted really significantly against Measure 91, where it's pretty much likely that the voters would choose to opt out. They may opt out through their through action of their local elected officials. If 55% or more of the community voted against Measure 91, then local officials may opt out on behalf of the community. Otherwise, you have to have a vote of the people. That captures a huge amount of the state, but not some of Eastern Oregon. So we decided to add a sweetener. And that is, if you allow every type of legal marijuana business, and don't prohibit any of the types of legal marijuana businesses, though you may have time, place, and manner regulation, which is fully appropriate in my opinion, then you may also invite your voters to weigh in on whether they'd like to have a local option 3% sales tax. And I think that may help some communities that are a little bit on the fence decide that they will try this new thing, which for some communities is scary and alien, and we're moving into a new era, and it's not 100% pretty, but it's a compromise that enabled us to move forward and get unanimous support for a lot of other good things. So I think that it was a good idea in the end. Some of the universally relevant issues we've been working on are lab testing and product contamination testing and potency testing, so that when consumers buy a product, they know exactly what's in it and they know how strong the product is going to be. There are land use issues that I think you're going to talk about later on. You know that getting an accessory dwelling on EFU land is typically contingent on having $80,000 a year in farm revenue from that land. And now that we are introducing legal cannabis as a crop, raises important issues that some of the pro-conservation, the environmental protection, farm use conservation people really care about, in terms of, are we going to be opening up after Measure 49 and the Measure 37 and all that land use battle, have we just created a new situation in which we're going to have tons of accessory dwellings on farmland and then people are going to stop using it as farmland and we're just going to have a whole bunch of little ranchettes? That's a big issue for us to be dealing with in the future. I'm going to give you three issues we're going to deal with in the future and then I'm going to stop. Over the interim, we're going to have a work group on environmental impacts from this new sector, things like energy impacts, energy consumption, and how we can lawfully incentivize energy efficiency, because cannabis growing indoor is a very energy intensive activity, water use, and how this new sector is affecting water supply or water use in the agricultural sector, and pesticide use. I think you may have seen that there, in some products, are high pesticide concentrations, and do we want to create best practices as a sector on how we use pesticides, especially because it's off-label, right? Since it's a Schedule I controlled substance, federal pesticide laws don't permit pesticide use on cannabis crops, so how do we do this? So there's environmental protection work, there's work around further crime reclassification and expungement. There's work on the issue of how legalization is affecting young people. We're going to create a student advisory council on drug policy and youth. And the idea is going to be, let's have high school students from around the state let us know how legalization is affecting their world. Are they noticing a significant increase in the presence of cannabis and other drugs on campus? Are they noticing no increase? Are they getting information, which we've directed that happened, about how cannabis may be legal for adults, but that doesn't make it appropriate for young people? You know, how is that working? We know that we've got a lot of evolution to do. Probably some of the things we implemented in these five pieces of legislation, the last of which was, hey, Congress, please solve the banking problem, because it's nuts to have legal businesses that have to walk around with tens of thousands of dollars in duffel bags. It's dangerous for employees. It's bad for business. Let's solve that. We may have to make changes. We will have to make changes. We acted in good faith. There's a lot of goodwill, I think, among people on our committee and within the stakeholder community who know we were trying really hard to get it right. I'm sure we didn't get it all right. But I think that we have the goodwill, the understanding this is important, and the humility to come back and do some do-overs. So like the medical program, we'll probably be redoing this for many years, but with your help, hopefully we can move this into a really positive space for Oregon and create some great new jobs. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Trickster Phillips from St. Charles County, Missouri, and you're listening to 420radio.org.
Hi, I'm Alex Rogers, producer of the fourth Oregon Medical Marijuana Business Conference, the OMMBC. There have been a lot of recent changes to Oregon cannabis laws. Recreational sales start October 1st, new licensing from the state, and changes to medical marijuana. Are you prepared? Join us at the downtown Portland Hilton September 12th and 13th with the industry's top cannabis business experts, political leaders, exhibitors, and nightly networking events. For more information, join us online or give us a call. The OMMBC. Be part of history.
Oregon has joined Washington and Colorado in legalizing marijuana. We're Portland Normal, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws chapter in Portland, Oregon. Join us as we celebrate the launch of an exciting new era in marijuana freedom in Oregon. Our job has just begun. Powerful interests want to white out the most important portions of Oregon's legalization law. By joining Portland Normal, you add your voice to the thousands who voted for Measure 91 and want it to be implemented as written. The people have spoken. Now it is time for the legislature to obey the will of the people. Find out more about Portland Normal at portlandnormal.org. Attend our monthly membership meetings on the fourth Saturday of the month. See our website for more details. Portland Normal, ensuring responsible adult marijuana consumers are afforded the same rights, privileges, and responsibilities as beer drinkers. Imagine life without taxes. Let New Era Certified Public Accountants, NewEraCPAs.com, handle your Cannabusiness 280E and tax strategy. Get your business prepared with New Era CPAs Cannabis Finance Bootcamp. NewEraCPAs.com, with years of experience in the industry, we are one of the nation's leading accounting firms for growers, dispensaries, and ancillary companies from Washington to California. NewEraCPAs.com.
Thank you. Thanks for the introduction. And I want to see the hands again. How many folks here currently grow on the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program? All right, that's a lot of folks. And so I want to hear from people and make sure you're doing it correctly. How many folks here, how many plants can you have per patient, mature plants?
Six.
Wait, I didn't hear that.
Six.
All right, and then how many patients can you as a grower grow for?
Four.
All right, and then how many growers can be on one piece of property?
Unlimited.
Four.
All right, unlimited, that's correct. I just want to make sure that people know, because that's one of the common questions that I get at my office all the time, is that people want to know what the current is, and people always think, well, wait a minute, maybe, you know, only six plants, can I have an extra one? You know, I'm worried about this one, you know, becoming hermaphrodite. I'm worried about this one doesn't looks kind of sickly, and I just want to have an extra one in case the other one there is sickly and I have to remove it from the room or chop it down. And there is no such thing as an extra. It's one of the things that we have to remember while we're all excited about Measure 91. Up until then, we've got to be really careful. You can't jump ahead. I get people talking to me all the time. I'm sure that you get people coming to this grow shop saying, I want to get ready now for 91. I want to expand now, so come January 1, I can jump on board and have all this product. But again, that's off in the distance. Right now, we have the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program. And that's what's out there, and that's what we all have to pay attention to, and be careful. Because again, you know, is that not all counties are favorable, not all cities are favorable to the medical marijuana program. There's still people out there busting people, sheriffs and local law enforcement, who go out of compliance. And, you know, and again, and the big issue we all have right now is that when you're transferring the excess patient's marijuana, remember, it all belongs to the patients until it goes to dispensary, is that you only have a pound and a half per card. So please remember that. So if you only have two cards on you, you can only take 3 pounds on your journey to a dispensary. Law enforcement loved, you know, pull you over and say, smells like marijuana. Let's pop that trunk. And then we'll see how much is there. And think, okay, how many cards do you have? And they want to, you know, and they may not even charge you anything, but they'll take your marijuana and take your money. Wow. Sorry about that. I thought I'd turn this one off. All right, now it's off. So again, just be careful out there. right now, because we, again, the medical marijuana program, it's quite limited amounts as opposed to Measure 91. And again, you only have a limited exemption to the criminal statutes, and that's if you follow those amounts. You know, when we passed the, and we amended this to allow a pound and a half per patient, it seemed like a lot. But now a pound and a half to, you know, growers out there doesn't seem like very much. And you think you should be able to have all that you can harvest. And it's not the way the law looks at it. So I just want to remind folks to be careful on that as we move into the future. Measure 91, I'm sure, you know, all you all know about it. Come July 1 here, every adult can possess small amounts. But the commercial growing permits aren't going to come out until next year, most likely. The Measure 91 says that OLCC has until January 1 to come up with the rules and regulations and application form for folks to get their one of the four licenses, or all four. And here we're talking about the producer license, otherwise known as the grower license. And by January 4th next year, they have to start accepting the applications. And so again, we're off in the distance here yet. And so, and the legislature is still meeting down there in Salem. And they could change Measure 91. 91 is only a statute initiative. It's not a constitutional amendment. So, you know, and a lot of them can't keep their hands off of it. A lot of them think that they know what's best for the program, although they never even thought about marijuana, you know, until January, some of them. And so now all of a sudden, you know, a lot of folks in Salem think they're experts on it, when people out here in the audience have been dealing with this issue for 20 years or more, and been growing for 20 years or more, and are way more experts than the folks in Salem, but they're out there growing. I mean, they're out there right now telling us what to do. We have to pay attention to that. And one of the things coming down the pike is going to be some sort of residency requirement, I'm sure. Measure 91 doesn't have it in there. It's silent about whether or not you have to be an Oregon resident. But that's coming. That's something to pay attention to. You know, we don't know what that's going to mean. 1 year to 4 years, that's going to be thought about. And I know a lot of folks here would like it to be as long as possible. And to keep out, because I heard the discussion at the end of the last talk about, you know, keeping this for Oregonians. And as one of the ways said best is, you know, be the best, grow your best, and you'll be able to keep out the big players out there. That's one of the things that you have to remember to do. And one of the issues is they're dealing with, even though Measure 91 said, and it was one of the big campaign bullet points, it wasn't buried in legislation like some of the folks would like you to believe. Measure 91 said the Oregon medical marijuana program would be left alone. Yeah, that's what it said, and that's where it's supposed to be. Some of our friends in the state legislature think, well, they didn't pay attention to that. They just saw legalization. And no, that was one of the points that, you know, Anthony was out there as the chief petitioner telling everybody, and that's everybody who voted, they all knew the Oregon medical marijuana program was supposed to be left alone. And that's why, you know, a lot of us have been in Salem lobbying them to, you know, all right, if you're going to touch this program, do the least amount of damage as possible to it. I mean, that's, you know, it's important. A lot of patients out there depend upon medical marijuana. There's going to be strains out there that their patients want that the general recreational market will not want. And that's what we need to, you know, have that out there. And so one of the things that I wanted to talk about today was there were one of the proposals to modify medical marijuana. One of the things coming out there in all the legislation in common is to get rid of out-of-state patients being able to have medical marijuana cards. That's happening. When the one good thing is, come July 1st, if they can find some way to give them marijuana, an out-of-state patient won't have to go without medication anymore. But come, you know, January 1st next year, they're not going to be able to sign up for a card. If you're an out-of-state patient and get a card, let's say December 15th of this year, you will have your card for an entire 365 days, but you won't be able to renew it if you're an out-of-state patient. So that's coming along. And I know a lot of folks here, you know, that's how they have those extra plants just in case something happens to them, is they have a relative in a non-medical marijuana state, you know, sign up, see an Oregon doctor. And I understand that. And with that's going away, people don't like, especially, you know, when the our friends in the media like to make a big show out of the fact that, you know, one garden out of 50,000 gardens has a bunch of Californians in it, only Californians. So, I mean, our friends in the media there didn't do us any favors. So, and the, and then one of the things is that the current bill out there that to modify the medical marijuana program, but to save it, is House Bill 3400. How many folks have heard of House Bill 3400? Okay, some of you have. And that's one that's out there that Peter Buckley introduced. And some of us folks here in the room have had some input into this bill and are continuing to help him refine that bill. And I want to talk about some of the things there and how that compares to commercial marijuana production under Measure 91. Under Measure 91, it's going to be, you know, once you get your license, the $250 application fee, and then if they approve you, $1,000. And it's going to be, at this point, the same criminal background check as they have now to be a medical marijuana grower. If they look for a conviction for manufacture, delivery, controlled substance, Schedule 1 or 2, and look in the last 5 years to see if you have one, then if you have two in your lifetime, you're permanently banned. I mean, that's something that needs to be changed. I mean, why should you think something that was that is now legal keep you from doing it just because it was illegal in the past? And that's one of the things we need to keep lobbying down here in Salem, you know, in the future, is to, you know, get rid of all these convictions that people have for marijuana offenses. There should be total amnesty for all marijuana convictions. Woo! And then the, so when you get your commercial production license, that has to be a, you know, obviously a site here in Oregon. It's going to have to be one that's properly zoned. People who now, you know, grow in a city in their garage or an extra building having a garage in a basement, that's not going to be allowed anymore because that's currently under medical. I mean, it's not really, traditionally, it's not a business legally. It's just something you're doing. And so therefore, you can get away with doing it in your basement or in your garage in a city. But now that it'll be a business, you can't carry on a business activity in your basement or in your garage in a residential zone. They will allow this in the rural residential zones, because there's always been sort of lots of small businesses in rural residential zone. And as Jamie would say, it's one of the reasons people are now looking for EFU land, exclusive farm use land. Because that's one of the areas you want to grow outdoors, or even buy that land, even put greenhouses on it, or pole barns. And let's see here.
The Russ Belville Show is proudly sponsored by the Marijuana Business Association. The MJBA, called by NBC News the Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, is the fastest growing business association in the fastest growing industry in America. I've been working with the MJBA for years, and I personally invite you to join the MJBA. MJBA also publishes the popular MJ Headline News on Facebook and the MJNewsNetwork.com, and Marijuana Channel 1 on YouTube. Visit MJBA.net for more details. The Fingerboard Extension has fretted instruments to enhance your creativity. It has new and used guitars and banjos from beginning to high class. The Fingerboard Extension has National Resophonic, Husson Dalton, Larrabee, Heritage and Recording King guitars, and Mike Ramsey, Wildwood, Gold Tone and Recording King banjos. The Fingerboard Extension also has drum stuff, used gear and parts. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension, downtown Corvallis, Oregon at 120 Northwest 2nd, or check out the inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com and reverb.com. Get .buzz. .buzz is the internet platform that fuels community interest, excitement, and new experiences. .buzz is the premier online destination for internet users seeking the latest news on a variety of topics. .buzz appeals to groups active in blogging, communications, journalism, advertising, and marketing. .buzz offers registrants a stronger alternative to the shrinking namespace of existing top-level domain names, such as .com, .net, and .org. Get your name now at get.buzz.
There you go. And this is Rick Cusick, and you're listening to 420 Radio.
Hey. Hey. Good afternoon, Eugene. Woo. Eugene in the springtime. Woo. It's wonderful to be here, and I'm so grateful to Alex and Ungayo and Anthony Johnson and Debbie Goldsberry for putting on these conferences. I speak at a lot of business law conferences, but this is the only one that combines activism and business information. And, you know, I was so impressed with what Chelsea had to say. I want to share with you that Keith Strop, who's the founder and still the legal director at Normal, likes to say, if you know, the best thing you can hope for is that you leave a conference with one new thought. And I hope the one new thought is what Chelsea is saying to y'all, which is it's critically important that you be involved in a positive way in your community. It is the thing that's going to change it, because that's where the war is playing out in Oregon, in the implementation of House Bill 3460. Even before 91 went into effect, that's where it's playing out. I'm going to talk about that a little later. I did want to follow up also on something that Alex mentioned. Listen, Measure 91 is about this. It's about that July 1st, everywhere in Oregon, a person who's 21 years or older can possess an ounce of marijuana in private legally. That's what it's about. It's about any adult 21 years or older can grow 4 plants, have 8 ounces, have 72 ounces of usable liquid, 30 ounces of solid, and an ounce of oil. And it's about legalization. The industry part of it, the part that we're all gathered together to talk about, is the portal through which it became possible to achieve what is so far the most dramatic cannabis law reform in the country. But it's not the important part. Freedom is the important part. I don't like to promote Normal all that much, but I'm part of the Normal Legal Committee. I'm excited Russ Belville started up Portland Normal again. But I was going to say, I'm part of the Normal Legal Committee. And, you know, not everybody in the Normal Legal Committee is a consumer, but most of us are. And I found in the industry, it's like that as well. And that it's not people who say, you know, oh, I'm going to make a gazillion bucks, this is what I want to do. It's people like Chelsea who are motivated by compassion. You know, that there's an opportunity to make money doing good work. And so God bless you all for that. I'll talk in a minute about how our office is organized and how I work closely with Robert Graham, but I hate to start off this way, but I have to correct him on one thing. Extractions are only lawful at grow sites, because under the definition of manufacture is extraction. And extraction is manufacture. You can only manufacture at a grow site. Can't have a grow site at a dispensary, or really a medical marijuana facility. So you can't extract at a facility. You can only extract at a grow site. And then I have these announcements. Are there any other lawyers here besides me still? Could you stand up if you're... I can't even see everybody. Hi! Can we have a round of applause for the cannabis lawyers? You know, Alex said... And I appreciate the hell out of him giving me an opportunity to speak to y'all. But it's bullshit to say that it's just Robert and I. There's lots of good cannabis lawyers. And what Steve D'Angelo said is true. There's plenty enough work for all of us, you know? So there isn't any reason for us to be like that. And I want to tell you about 2 exciting new lawyer things. One is, did you see, Leah, where those people were?
Yeah.
Could you go? So Leah's going to come back to y'all because... we're starting, you know, within the Oregon State Bar, there are different sections. There's an aviation law section, an appellate law section, a criminal law section. We're starting a cannabis law section.
Yeah.
And it requires signatures, and even though the campaign's over, signature gathering isn't over, and so Leah's going to take care of that now. And then I'm really excited to let you know that this Thursday night, or afternoon, 4 o'clock on Thursday, in Berkeley, California with me on Skype is going to be the founding board of directors meeting of the Cannabis Bar Association.
Yeah.
And I know that we talked a little bit yesterday about, you know, Michelle Alexander says it's not right that white men are making money off of black men in prison in this industry, and that's exactly correct. And there is JC still here? Could you stand up? If you have a question about the Minority Cannabis Industry Association, check in with JC, and I just wanted to mention their website is minoritycannabis.org. Sole member of an LLC called Oregon Cannabis Business Compliance Council. I've been practicing for 32 years in April, which is longer than anybody else. I've been working on this, I'm trying to free the weed for the last 20 years. And about 4 years ago, when I was working some with voter power at Measure 74, which was a regulated supply system bill, people started coming to my house, where I was working out of, to say, well, if this passes, what do I need to do to be in compliance? And so a couple of years ago, two Decembers ago, I started Oregon Cannabis Business Compliance Council, LLC. And one thing that was interesting about it I don't mind meeting with people, with drug war victims, people who've been arrested and prosecuted in my home, but I didn't think business people, I have enough trouble with people taking me serious anyway, but I was worried they wouldn't take me seriously if I was meeting them at the house, and I decided I needed an office. And about 3 years ago, Leah Flynn, who's my legal assistant, office manager, industry insider, and pot snob, started organizing my life, and we went looking for places, and we found a place, and we put an awful lot of work into it. I had to find another lawyer, Ann Witte, to help sublet one of the offices. And at the very last minute, after like 2 weeks of trying to figure this out, the landlady says, well, it's just one more thing, but it's a deal breaker. I said, what's that? She says, well, you can't be, or put a sign up that says Oregon Cannabis Business Compliance Council. I said, why not? She said, well, it might offend other tenants. And I said, well, that's bigotry. And she said, no, it's not. And I said, well, what if I had decided to shift my practice away from criminal law and look after the rights of gays and lesbians and transgender people and bisexuals and open homosexual law? And she said, well, that's different. And I said, no, it isn't. And so we didn't rent there. We ran it somewhere else. And I didn't wake up one morning and say, you know, well, I've been practicing criminal law. I can advise about business formation. I know all there is to know about intellectual property, about zoning and everything. So what I've done is I've associated with different lawyers around the state. Cole Haver in Portland does business formation work as part of an association that we have. He is Voodoo Donuts corporate counsel. And he and I went to law school together, and 35 years ago, and he's an art law guy by trade, so he does intellectual property work statewide. Robert Graham knows securities law, and he does that statewide, as well as business formation in the southern part of the state, as well as co-chairing trials that we've had down there. Ross Day is a property rights activist. And so he helps out with zoning, because you're going to hear how they're fucking... Do I offend anybody if I say that?
Yeah.
How they're fucking with us on zoning and land use stuff. He knows that stuff. And I could figure that out, but he's got these relationships that are so critical that, like Chelsea mentioned about Brian. And then this young woman from Wisconsin who went to Marquette, went to law school in Minnesota, came out here and worked with some of the criminal lawyers for a while. Went back to school, got a LLM, a master's degree in environmental law with an emphasis in hemp. So I'm associated with the hemp goddess, Courtney Moran. No one knows more hemp law than Courtney Moran. So I'm excited about that.
Okay.
I can tell you currently at OC3, we are working on a compendium of what would be the best places to site a store, a retail outlet, a medical marijuana facility, a retail outlet. after the moratoriums end in May. And we're also almost done, aren't we? Figuring out which counties are going to be the counties to cultivate in with the least resistance from the locals and the best climate. And if you want more information about that, give us a call, come on in and see us, and we'll be glad to talk to you about it. I did want to mention about the out-of-state patients. Joel Berenger was taking his friend Jeremy Fox from Northern California up to Fort Lewis McChord, where Jeremy Fox was going to become Sergeant Fox and fly to the Rock. And Joel Berenger had just long flowing red hair, big red beard, red 4x4. And he's coming up 205 near Oregon City, 72 miles an hour and 55. And Officer Nashy from the Oregon City Police pull him over for speeding and say, "What's all that weed on the floor?" And Joel says, "Here's my California recommendation." And Nashy says, "That ain't no good here." So we went to court and argued that the California recommendation was due full faith and credit in Oregon, so the probable cause went away as soon as he saw it. You with me still?
Yeah.
And that if it didn't, he was interfering with my client's constitutional right to travel. So we lost in the trial court and went up on appeal, and the Court of Appeals said, well, we're not interfering with the California recommendation because California recommendation provides a limited immunity under California law, and he still has a limited immunity under California law. But the right to travel is about, do we treat non-Oregonians differently from Oregonians in an illegal way? And it depends on whether the statute is ambiguous or not, and they found the statute was ambiguous, and we lost again. So we lost the case, but changed the law, because the Attorney General read it and advised the Oregon Health Authority that they should promulgate new rules, and that's how we got out-of-state patients. By the way, there was a young lawyer who helped me out on the appeal. His name is Anthony Johnson. But the only reason we needed to do that shit was that we kept going to the legislature seeking reciprocity, and they kept telling us to fuck off, you know? No, we're not going to have it. The cops said no, and we couldn't get reciprocity, so this is how we achieved this. And I was thrilled to hear Senator Floyd Prusansky yesterday say that we're going to get reciprocity.
That's huge.
It is good news, isn't it? And plus, you know, I sort of wonder, like, how much do we really need it? We need it, I guess, for the kids, right? If you're under 21 and a patient and you're visiting, but if you're over 21 and a patient, then you'd be legal anyway. I want to talk a little bit about legislation. I mentioned yesterday about 3722, which is the bill to change the sentences and expunge everything. I got an email from Aaron Romano, who's a normal lawyer in Connecticut, where they had won a case there, and I think we may be able to change that law to fix that problem. 2645 is a bill that would make it illegal to vape in, it would add vaping cannabinoids as well as tobacco products in the, or nicotine, in under the Indoor Clean Air Act, which calls into question the legality of lounges. And we're being told, well, you could have a lounge so long as it was a private club and no employees. But, you know, I'm really concerned about it. If you are, anybody here have a lounge, want to open a lounge, it's really time to contact your legislator and say, WTF, what are we going to do to make it so we could get lounges? Because... No more.
We love the earth.
So you got.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
You take a seat, you plant it, you grow it, you giant, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seat, you plant it, you